Good evening. James McCanny here with my Science Hour, December 27th, 2012. And going to summarize this week, where I'm headed this coming year. There's a lot of activity that I'm expecting with this new comet. I've talked about that extensively. So that goes without saying. But my effort will be to continue to educate the public on issues regarding space weather, solar conditions, etc. Right now, interestingly enough, as we head into the solar maximum, and that should be peaking in another year or so, but we're supposedly on the incline, the sun is at one of the most tranquil levels in decades and decades and decades. Many solar cycles have been much more active than this one. Certainly the solar cycle back in the 90s, where we had Hale-Bopp activating the sun, was certainly more active. But the sun is very bland. Now, that could have a big effect, or actually the opposite, actually a little effect, on the comet coming in, C2012-S1, because the comet is only as powerful as the solar capacitor that it's discharging. So very interesting. We had some serious weather in the southern United States this past week, but on a worldwide scale, the weather is very bland. We have the usual midwinter hyperactivity down in the South Pacific off of Malaysia, but that's there all the time. That's that area of the South China Sea that seems to be always active with small storm systems and electrical conditions, etc., lightning, etc. But other than that, the world is quite calm in terms of weather. And, of course, weather is built by the electrical conditions in the solar system, which are produced by the sun. So something this past week that was very interesting, I went out and took a look, and Jupiter had a very close alignment with our moon. Jupiter was a very close relation with our moon. So that was very interesting to see on Christmas Eve. Christmas Eve, it was Jupiter and the moon were side by side. And when I saw it, you could tell that they were moving away from one another. But they had a conjunction. I saw some very interesting pictures. And then also we had some very interesting ring structures around the moon. What happens is ice crystals very high up in the atmosphere cause like a prism type effect. And there was a very unusual, I believe it's 22 degrees, 21 degrees, something like that, is the typical circle with ice crystals up in the upper atmosphere. But there was an unusual 9-degree circle that is caused when the ice crystals form little pyramids. And so that's just was a very interesting thing to see this past week, that this moon having rings, kind of like the sun sometimes. Well, it's like the opposite of opposite of a rainbow. With a rainbow, the sun is behind you. It reflects off of droplets of water, kind of a prism effect. And then within the prism, it divides light into the various colors. Well, with the halo around the sun or the halo around the moon, it's a different effect. It's a light is passing through from behind, and so in this case, ice crystals up high in the sky. Sometimes after a rain or if the rain is off on the horizon, you can see what are called sun dogs, and they're off to both sides of the sun. They're little rainbows, but at any rate, So that was another interesting atmospheric effect that we saw this past week. Last week, I ended my show with a little short dissertation on the Christmas star and the fact that it has to be had to have been a comet in all the various properties. So this week, I just want to announce that I thought it was rather comical. I got some feedback from a number of people, especially from England. And the BBC was quite active trying to promote the idea from astronomers. And now you got to always believe astronomers. But they were talking about the Christmas star being a planetary alignment. And they're just trying to pump this planetary alignment concept of the Christmas star. I just want to summarize what the issue is here. Of course, the Christmas star was a comet. Not only was it a comet, it was a very unusual comet. And in my research, I've come to understand from various indicators that the Christmas star was a comet with a companion. Of a very unusual set of either one companion or more than one companion, so that when the wise men saw this, they knew. And by the way, when they went to talk to Herod, he knew. He knew what was going on. They said, "Hey, but look at, you know, by the way, we're following this star, and this is the star, you know, the predicted star for thousands of years, and we're following it." And so anyway, they then realized that Herod probably didn't have the best intentions, and they split in the middle of the night and left, and probably regretted telling Herod, but Herod goes out and has all of the firstborn males of all the families in the land, has them all executed, killed. But at any rate, this is a very interesting whole series of events. I made the point last week that I always find it interesting that there were three kings, not one or two. If there was one king, you would say, no big deal. If there were two kings, you could even say, oh, coincidence. But three kings, now, it was real. And so what's interesting, though, is the level of coverage that is being given to this Christmas star being planetary alignment story. So I just wanted to rebuff it a little bit here, give some other points. Planetary alignments happen all the time, and these astronomers want to make it sound like, oh, this was a rare thing once every 900 years. Well, boys and girls, these signs were expected over thousands of years. In those thousands of years, there were just dozens and dozens, if not hundreds, if not thousands, of planetary alignments. All of them could be construed as being unusual. But at any rate, also, here's another good point. Planetary alignments for people like the wise men would be predictable, and so they would know in advance that they were going to happen. They didn't have to wait to see something in the sky and go, oh, gee, there's that planetary alignment we've been waiting for, because they could have predicted it. Those guys knew. This was something that came that they didn't have any way of predicting. Also, the planetary alignment doesn't fit the story. The planetary alignments only last a day. And so if it rained or had a cloudy night, you'd miss it. You wouldn't see it. It had to be something that was there day, night, month after month, something very clearly that people would recognize. The comet is the only thing that can appear in the east, and then you follow it to the west. And the reason for that is because just like Venus can be the morning star and the evening star, it's in the east when it's the morning star, it's in the west when it's the evening star. But it's the same planet Venus, and it's the same situation with a comet, that it can appear in the eastern sky, and then if it's on an orbit around the sun, it'll disappear for a little while and then be in the west. And that was the story. they saw it in the east, and then when they followed it to the west. And a comet is really the only thing that could fit that story for the period of time that they're talking about. And, of course, it would not have been the planet Venus, because Venus by that time was well established as a planet. A planetary alignment would never, ever, ever be used to predict something thousands of years in advance. And if it were, it would pinpoint the date. You wouldn't talk about look up in the sky and see a planetary alignment. You would give the date. You'd say on this date, this is going to happen. But that's not what the situation was. It was something in the sky, a sign in the sky that we were waiting for, and it didn't have a calendar date attached to it. It was something they had to sit there and wait. And when it appeared in the sky, they go, that's it. Get on your camel and ride, boys. And then they meet en route as they're converging. And then they came and met with Herod. And as I said, Herod was aware of this. And so anyway, he had all the firstborn in the whole land killed to try and stamp out this new leader that was supposed to rise up out of the public. The Catholic Church is very preoccupied with comets. And when Halbop came into the solar system, they were very preoccupied because it had a companion. And they wanted to know if, in fact, this was the Wormwood comet. So it tells you a lot about the belief systems out there. So at any rate, it's just amazing the amount of the controlled press, and the BBC is one of the biggest controlled press outlets from the Rothschild banking community on down. The BBC is a very controlled news source. Many times NASA and the scientific community in the U.S. release their disinformation through the BBC. And it's a very interesting twist how that happens. But in this case, the BBC releasing information about the Christmas star being what their astronomers saying that it's supposed to be a planetary alignment. But once again, back to the main point, why all the deception about the Christmas star? And one of the listeners that wrote in over this past week, since I did the show last week, noting that the BBC was really pounding on this on the internet, on radio shows, did a big special radio show. I'm not sure if there were TV shows, but at any rate, making a big point about the Christmas star being planetary alignments. But what's the big deal? Why is all the misinformation about the Christmas star? Why do they have to distort that story? Well, it's very simple. What they're trying to do is to make sure people do not look into the sky, into the heavens, for comets for answers, especially comets that have companions. Now, you know, we see comets in the solar system all the time, so that's not something unusual. What would be unusual about a comet that would set it apart from all other comets? Do you see that comet and you go, that is it, that's the sign? And what I thought was that even a companion could be possible. But a comet with two companions in some kind of a orbital structure where the two companions are orbiting the main comet, the question is, could the Christmas star have been a comet with two companions, something really, really unusual, so that when you saw that, when the three kings saw it, it was like, wow, that is it. But, of course, the point I'm making here is that they do not, I repeat, they do not want people looking at comets, especially comets with companions. They were extremely freaked out when the Heaven's Gate group started to converge, have meetings, and were calling in their 10,000-strong public from around the country to converge on Los Angeles to go up on a hill outside L.A. and wait for the comet to come. And, of course, that's a story in itself, but the powers that be are deathly afraid, number one, of people and groups recognizing comets with companions. Number two, that they would go and converge and meet and expect something to happen. So they are deathly afraid of that, at any rate. And so all of the misinformation about comets. One time I was on the Art Bell Show, and Art was talking to me. He said, Jim, how come you're getting all of this negative press about your comet model? It's just a comet model. What's the big deal? And I said, at that time, this is, you know, a good, 15 years ago or something or more. And I said, well, I think it's the egos of the NASA scientists, big egos, and, you know, they don't want their dirty snowball comet model touched, and you know, it's a lot of ego, and they'd have to reprint all the books and all of the magazine journal articles, peer-reviewed magazine and journal articles would be laughed at, and he said, no, he said, all of that they could get over. What, there's something else going on here, there's something bigger, there's something really big about your comet theory, and there's something major that they don't want the public to know or see. So at any rate, that's what, after time, I realized that old Art was right, that there was something, definitely something bigger and more central to the fears of the world leaders. There was something that they feared about comets, especially comets with companions, and there's nobody that knows better than Art Bell about comets with companions, because he got blamed for the 37 deaths of the Heaven's Gate people, and like I said last week, that was a mass murder, not a mass suicide. So at any rate, it's unfortunate to cloud Christmas with these issues, but it's not me clouding the issues, it's somebody else, and I'm just trying to break this down and clarify it for people, because we live in a world full of evils and evil people. And so it's very important to discuss this. You look at Herod. He was afraid to death of this Christmas star, the predicted star and comet. They knew what it was, but the common people didn't know. They, as with today, they're blocking this information from the public, but the leaders very much know. When Hale-Bopp came into the solar system, the Vatican, and I know this because I was in communication with some of the astronomers from the University of Minnesota. They were staffing the Arizona facility of the Vatican. It was a very exclusive type of telescope which was only designed to look at comets and study comets. Comets are not like a deep space pinpoint of light galaxy far, far away, or quasar, or some other small point of light in the distant universe. Comets are close and they're big, so you need a telescope that has a very wide, clear field of view, very good light reception, and very clear, because comets are just by their very nature very fuzzy. And so the whole issue with a telescope designed for comets, it's very different than any other type of telescope. So when Hale-Bopp came in and the Vatican gave out the order to the astronomers that worked at the facility in Arizona, they said, is this wormwood? Is this, what are the characteristics of this comet, Hale-Bopp? And so they are very aware. Why would they ask yourself this, why would the Vatican ask that question about a comet, that is Hale-Bopp wormwood? Wormwood is supposed to be a big planet, that basically another word for Planet X. Why is the Vatican asking, is Hale-Bopp Planet X, basically? because they know it's going to look like a comet. And so that's the one thing I'm constantly dealing with in my work, is pointing out that comets are not dirty snowballs. They're the plasma discharge of the solar capacitor, and the big ones can be very big, and the tail drag changes their order, their orbital characteristics. All of this fundamental physics being blocked because of the leadership of the world so very deathly afraid that the public will find out, and continue to ask the basic questions regarding the true nature of their history, the true nature of the world, the Noah's flood, the Moses event. Just look at all of the questions that could be answered if the masses woke up to the fact that comets are these discharges of the solar capacitor. There's something totally different going on here. So at any rate, I just wanted to review the Christmas star issue and let you know that the BBC and other news outlets have been hammering this planetary alignment concept. And why? Because they want to keep the public stupid. The flat earth theories, the fairy tale science of NASA, all going together to dissuade the public from understanding their true birthright. This week, as I mentioned on my webpage, I wanted to do a little discussion of space weather. And this is a prelude to what's coming up in a couple weeks. We are going to have an alignment with the comet C2012S1. And at this point, the way the sun is acting, I think we're going to have a very weak interaction with this comet. And so that's something that we'll have to wait and see. It's very hard to predict. But January, about 14th to 15th, 2013, we're going to have a very close electrical alignment. The comet is out by the orbit of Jupiter. It's quite a ways away. That's a long ways for an electrical connection. Remember that we do get the Jupiter winds, what I call the Jupiter winds. When Earth and Jupiter align, we get some severe winds on Earth. And so with this comet, remember, comets are doing a much better job of discharging the solar capacitor, even though the nucleus of this comet would be nowhere near the size of Jupiter. Jupiter does affect Earth, and we do get some heavy wind activity when we align with Jupiter. So the orbit of Jupiter is not too far to expect something to happen with this comet. But the other factor is that the sun is weak. The solar cycle that we're in, we're supposed to be climbing up in energy. The sun is supposed to be very powerful at this time of the solar cycle in building and building, but it's not. The sun is very wimpy at this point, and that includes the solar wind. That could signify that both Earth's electrical connection, our new moon passing, all of these factors which normally would add to make a fairly significant electrical discharge to Earth around that time frame, all of these factors are at a minimum. And so we might not see anything at all, although it's going to be interesting to watch. Speaking of watch, I think you have to set your watch to that date so that you remember to go out and just look at things, see if we're having any aurora activity, auroras which act on the Earth's upper atmosphere, but at lower latitudes. That would be one of the major indicators that Earth is experiencing some excited electron bombardment in the upper atmosphere that would cause auroras, or proton interactions that would also cause auroras around that time frame. I don't think we'll get much more. It doesn't seem like there's enough punch here to cause hurricanes, although that's still an option. You don't know until it happens. It's hard to predict, but those would be the indicators, high winds, and potential hurricane around the time frame of January 15th, 2013. And then the other thing is just auroras, and then auroras coming from the night side of Earth. And so that's important, too, to realize that the auroras would be on the pole that's closest to the comet. So in this case, we would be in the middle of winter, which indicates that the northern hemisphere is pointed away from the sun and out towards the comet. So it would be the northern hemisphere, northern lights that could be acting up if this comet does materialize, if it does start to discharge all the way out to from the orbit of Jupiter and then connecting with Earth where we are, far to the inside of the orbit of Mars. So all of this will be very interesting. We'll just keep an eye on this. So with that in mind, tonight I'm going to give a little bit of a summary of space weather, kind of a nebulous term. And first of all, if you were in standard science, if you were studying this as a subject, you would be told that there are magnetic effects, things that magnetic effects on the sun, magnetic effects in the solar wind, magnetic effects around the Earth and the planets. And the reality is, as I've pointed out throughout my career, is that these are secondary effects, that in the plasma environment of outer space, magnetic fields are secondary. They are magnetic fields like if you held a magnet in your hand from a permanent magnet. That magnetic field is locked in that piece of metal, but what's going on in the metal is that the iron atoms or the nickel atoms, primarily iron in a good magnet or other types of rare earth elements that have strong magnetic fields in the atoms, those atoms align, and there's the electrons spinning around the atoms cause the magnetic fields. So in other words, the magnetic fields don't simply exist. There's a reason for them. There's electronic movement, electrical movement going on that causes those magnetic fields. And it's the same as in the plasma environment of outer space. You will not have magnetic fields in outer space, and it's especially true in outer space because there are no permanent magnets in outer space. There's no little iron bar magnets. This is all moving electrical currents. And so if you measure a magnetic field in outer space, it's because there is charge moving. And in outer space, moving charge just doesn't happen. It has to have electrical fields to make them move. So what is the power source? What is the source of movement of electrical charge that causes magnetic fields in outer space? So right from the get-go, you can see that standard traditional science, the way it is taught in universities and graduate university level physics, space science, astronomy, astrophysics, is flawed. It's a basically improbable science. It's fairy tale science. It couldn't possibly be true. But therein lies the downfall of standard science, because they can't talk, they're not permitted to talk, and they can't think about electric fields because it's against the rules. They can't. They have to deal with that albatross around their neck, so to speak, of not being allowed or not talking about, or you know, they just don't think about, it's not in their realm of possibilities to talk about electric fields in outer space. And of course, what I pointed out from the very beginning of my work back in the 70s is that the electric fields come from the fusion-based stars. Okay, then objects like the Earth or Jupiter or the moons or the other planets or comets discharge their local capacitors. That's where the electric currents come from. In the very beginning of my book, what I call the weather book, which deals with space weather, is called Principia Meteorologia, the Physics of Sun-Earth Weather. I point this out, and I show that the source of electric fields is from the central star. And so this allows any object within that capacitor that surrounds the star, which extends with our sun, extends way out beyond the orbit of Pluto, all of these objects then have the capacity to discharge that capacitor. And this is where our weather comes from. In the beginning of my weather book, I was just starting to mention that I point out that if it were not for electrical conditions around planet Earth, we would have extremely bland weather. We would not have clouds. We would not have winds. We would not have tornadoes. We would not have hurricanes. Most of the weather that we see, it comes from electrical conditions that are driving our weather conditions from outer space, and my book shows how all of this happens. But none of this would happen if it were not for electric fields. Just if you examine solar light coming into the planet Earth, for example, all we would have is very bland weather, very low profile winds. They would be just slight breezes that would be moving the air around. And then at the terminator, where the light and the darkness meet, where the sun shadow starts on planet Earth as the Earth rotates, there would be a slight breeze where it would have some eddy currents there. But other than that, there wouldn't be any severe weather at all. We wouldn't have any of the weather we see today. As far as mountain building is concerned, we would not have any mountains. We wouldn't have the varying terrain where we would have oceans and mountains sticking up or land masses. Earth would be a round, perfectly round billiard ball covered evenly with water all over. In fact, if it weren't for the comets, we wouldn't have water at all on planet Earth, or the comet effects. That's where the water and oceans come from. One of the mysteries of the modern space science is, where did the water come from? Or in the case of Mars, where did the water go? They're constantly looking for water up there, but we know from historical references that the water on Mars, which was a blue planet in historical times, thousands of years ago, it lost its oceans, lost its atmosphere, as a large comet passed by and relieved it, basically, of its oceans and atmosphere, leaving the red hulk of a planet we see today. So space science can be rather simple if you have the basic principles down. Space weather, let's look at Mars. Starting off, let's talk about hurricanes on Earth. It is said in standard science meteorology that hurricanes are caused by warm ocean water. Well, we see hurricanes on Mars, and there's no oceans on Mars. How did the hurricanes form on Mars? Big, extensive hurricanes, so large that they can be photographed from Earth with telescopes from Earth. How do hurricanes form on Mars? If hurricanes form from warm water, why do we see them regularly? Some of the biggest hurricanes are in the frigid North Atlantic. It goes on and on, the foolishness. Just the contradictions are so amazing that, mind-boggling. The standard science is so full of contradictions and issues that couldn't possibly be true. That's why I call it fairy tale science. But the real issues are that electrical issues from the sun, electrical currents, the solar capacitor, are causing the objects in there, the Earth, the planets, the comets, etc., are causing a discharge of that solar capacitor. And when these planetary, cometary objects align, when they align, then we have extenuating circumstances, extenuating weather. And that's what allows me to predict months in advance, many, many months in advance, some of the most severe weather we've had on planet Earth. Because I can see these electrical alignments coming, and I say, okay, this is a date when there are going to be high probability of severe weather. And so the art, the science of predicting weather, severe weather, is based on reality, a reality that is not included in any of the weather models that are in computers today for standard weather. So at any rate, the whole point of this discussion is that space weather is a very important topic. It's a topic that affects all of us because we need to understand the weather. It's one of the things that affects us on a daily basis. Unless you're lucky enough to live in one of those very few places on Earth where the weather is the same and beautiful every day, weather affects us all. The varying climate, the change of the seasons, etc., affects how we live our daily lives. So weather is very important. Space weather causes Earth weather. If it weren't for space weather, Earth wouldn't have any weather at all. These concepts that somehow lightning shoots out the top and bottom of clouds all by itself just because the clouds rub together or there's turbulence in the clouds, there wouldn't even be any clouds or wouldn't be any turbulence in clouds if it were not for the electric fields. The big cumulonimbus clouds, those big storm clouds that are billowing roundish clouds that extend up hundreds of thousands of feet up into the atmosphere, those wouldn't exist if it weren't for the vertical electric field of the Earth. So this is the basis of weather. And Earth's weather, there's a dynamic between outer space and Earth, and that's what's explained in my weather book, the Principia Meteorologia, the Physics of Sun-Earth Weather, by the way, written for the general public. It's something that anybody can understand. And it's also written for people who are experts in the field so they can understand. But too many times what happens is it contradicts what they learned in their advanced education, either graduate level or undergraduate level, and they don't have the wherewithal to question their superiors. They don't have the wherewithal to question the authority, so to speak, that comes from a textbook. So they simply repeat what the textbook says, and they're totally wrong. One has to ask, how can the weatherman be totally wrong about the weather in predicting, for example, severe weather? Many times we have very severe weather, and the weathermen are dumbfounded. They're like, where did this come from? Well, how can I have a saying in one of my books, I believe it's the Atlantis to Tesla book, how can you predict the weather if you don't know what causes the weather? And so it's very true, it's a very true statement that if you look, for example, at the hurricane prediction models that are being used by the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, the NOAA computer models that pretend to predict hurricane paths and strength, etc., in the future, they don't have any realistic factors. All of the factors in there are fairy tale factors. They don't contribute at all to the real action of hurricanes. Hurricanes are driven by electrical currents that originally, ultimately, come from outer space. We should be trapping this energy and using it, harnessing it, to drive our electrical power needs. All of our power should come from electric from outer space. But there again, where would the power companies be? Oil, nuclear, coal. Where would those power companies be if the public woke up one day and found out we can have all the energy we need? It's passing by us every day out there in outer space. All we got to do is grab a hold of some of it. And not only that, but the techniques, the methods of doing that are well known and well established. So the point here is space weather is a very, very important topic. It's something I'll be concentrating on this coming year and on this show and in some of my future more public presentations. I'll be stressing space weather. And, of course, for example, we have the comet C2012-S1 coming in This will be affecting weather on some of the planets. It's going to have a very big alignment with a close passage by Mars next year. It's after that, shortly thereafter, it's going to have a very close up behind the rear side of the planet Mercury. We may see some weather activity there. We could actually see Mercury gaining an atmosphere, which would be very interesting. This comet's going to round the sun and come back out up over Earth, not real close, about 38 million miles away, which is a long ways away. It's about over a third the way to the sun. We'll have a nice broadside view of the comet. If the sun, the solar capacitor, maintains, which it doesn't look like it's going to do, this comet could potentially have some Earth weather effects later in January of 2014. And remember, 2013 January, we're going to see Earth and the comet electrical alignment. So we'll have to wait and see if that has a direct effect on Earth weather, something that's noticeable. As I said, auroras on the northern poles of Earth, unusual auroras, something that could be very much associated with the comet. Once back in the 90s, there was a report that came from the military, the U.S. military, that we had been hit, so to speak, by a freight train of electrical charge, basically electrons coming from the planet Jupiter. And so this was quite an announcement. But the military, they announced it, but they didn't have any idea what caused it or why would Earth be involved in an electron exchange with the planet Jupiter. Well, the reason is because Earth is on the nose side of Jupiter, on the sunward side of Jupiter, and as Jupiter discharges the solar capacitor, the electron beam is part of my plasma discharge comet model, and Jupiter is acting just like a comet. On the sunward side of Jupiter and all the planets is an electron beam, basically moving outward from the sun. And so we were involved in an electrical discharge with the planet Jupiter, and this was measured by the U.S. military. It was announced, and they couldn't tell why. So like many things with regard to weather, space weather, etc., simply swept under the rug. The data is forgotten, ignored. They try to pretend that it's not there. And so the real cause, of course, is very clear in my work, that the planetary alignments are real. Another thing that contributes to our weather situation is our moon, oddly enough. When our moon falls between Earth and the sun, we call it a new moon. And what I've discovered in my work is that about 2 days later, that moon out between us and the sun is actually blocking that electron beam. It's taking the brunt of the solar wind and actually fielding the comet discharge from the sun. Then when that moon moves away from between us and the sun, I call it the new moon passing. And so what happens? The new moon passes away. There's a big shock wave that comes in when that releases, the solar wind is released from the moon that's out in front of us, between us and the sun. That shock wave comes in and compresses our magnetic field and can drive Earth weather. That's why a couple days after the new moon, we can expect some shock waves. And then if you add into that other conditions, like say an electrical alignment with Jupiter, or as in January 15th, the electrical alignment with this comet, we could see some triggering of some severe weather on Earth, or auroras, other activity like that. Reverting back to ancient history now, we have a lot of events in ancient history which can be accounted for by cometary activity, by my new CD set, the 2-CD set, which talks about the physics of ancient celestial disasters. There's a good deal of electrical activity in especially the Moses event, the pillar of fire, the tornado pillar of fire extending up into the heavens that was noted. In the Moses event, there were many electrical type things that occurred, the burning bush, other electrical activity. Remember the burning bush? It was engulfed in a fire type of like an electrical discharge, but it did not consume the bush. Remember, and this was up at the top of Mount Sinai, where Moses went to get the tablets. So at any rate, a lot of electrical effects here. It's rather interesting to refer back to the Christmas star. There must have been quite the light show that was going on in the sky, because a typical comet, even Hale-Bopp, for example, was a significant comet, but it was relatively far away. I think 90 million miles was the closest it got to Earth. It was a significant comet in the sky, but I wouldn't say it lit up the sky. I think it was visible as a comet, which is unusual. In other words, it's a long, elongated object. Let's look at a comet like Comet Holmes. As big as the sun, bigger than the full moon in the sky, but very faint. It wasn't like illuminating. It wasn't just like lighting up the whole sky. You had to have good binoculars to really pick it up. You could kind of see it if you were really in a dark, dark area, but the average person would not have had those viewing conditions. But a comet that we're talking about, like the Christmas star, was putting on a pretty good light show in the sky. It was something that those three kings were privy to, and something that was very unusual. Because, I mean, comets come and go. Some are big, some are brighter. In the ancient comets, we know there were some brighter ones. But there was something special, very, very special about that Christmas star. And, of course, these are all electrical effects. When Hale-Bopp first came into the solar system, and I saw the NASA videos, we've still got them saved, it shows the companion swirling around the main nucleus, and it looks like a big whirlwind going on. And then NASA pulled that down very quickly, but luckily there were some people on the internet that captured that, and that's been saved for posterity. The movement of the companion around the main comet of Hale-Bopp. If Hale-Bopp would have been much closer to Earth when it was doing that, we would have had a pretty good light show here. A lot more people would know about that. It would have been more obvious that Hale-Bopp had a companion. But it was far out in the solar system. Only people with specialized equipment were able to see that. And the Hubble Space Telescope, I think it was the Hubble Space Telescope picture of Hale-Bopp, was the one that was presented on the internet by NASA. But like I say, the person who knows what that means, there's a number of other electrical comets that we've seen. It was back, I think it was in 2004, I was just reviewing this, where comets had we had two comets coming through the solar system, and I had a worldwide comet watch where it was viewed that there were electrical discharges extending out to the noseward side of those comets. And these were viewed by many people, and we have pictures of them that were sent in. But this is something that we could be seeing this coming year with Comet C2012-S1 as it comes up alongside of Earth, like I said, 38 million miles away, quite a good distance away, but with potential to be a very large comet, and then hopefully with the ability to see the sunward spike. And we're going to see NASA scrambling like crazy to try and explain away why a sunward spike is there, broadside to the comet, with a broadside view of the comet. And see, the standard explanation for sunward spike is that it's an optical illusion. It's a tail. This is the standard science explanation, that it extends. It's a tail that extends away from the sun, but only because of the angle you're looking at the comet, it only appears to be extending towards the sun. But if we have a big comet with a lot of electrical power, we're going to see this baby lighten up like a light bulb, and the sunward spike could be helical. It could be lashing out towards other objects in space, potentially asteroids or other objects in outer space. That'd be something interesting. I'll be working on that with my work, is seeing what kind of other items might be in outer space that we would have an electrical connection, see an electrical connection between this comet and other objects in outer space, like small planetoids, for example. Could this comet be lashing out and hitting some of those? It would be very interesting to see. And of course, when the people start to see this, they're going to recognize that this is not some little snowball that's doing this. That's why I hope this comet lives up to its expectation and is very bright, is very very luminescent, like a neon light bulb, so to speak. That was one of the things that, another thing that comet scientists in standard science very much want to dissuade people from thinking about, is that comets are actually illuminating, luminescence, meaning that they are lighting up, they're giving much more light off, giving off much more light than they receive from the sun. And so that's an issue that the scientists don't want to talk about, because in the dirty snowball comet model, how could this passive comet with no electrical conditions at all, how could it be giving off an illuminating light? The Hopis talked about the comets that give off the blue comets. They said those are the dangerous ones. Those are the ones that give off a tremendous amount of light, and it's in the color blue. Now, if you say you take a piece of metal and heat it up, or any type of plasma or whatever, if you heat it up to a certain level, it becomes orange first of all, then it becomes red and orange and then yellow, and then if it becomes blue, it's the hottest of all. And so anyway, the Hopi talk about the blue comets being the dangerous ones. There's so much electrical current passing through them that they actually light up like a light bulb but become blue. So those are the very hot ones. Those are the very dangerous ones. And of course, electrical effects. And of course, standard science can't explain this. They don't try to. They just try and hand wave it away and pretend it doesn't exist. And there again, this coming year, C2012S1, I hope that it's luminescent enough where the whole world will be able to see this thing lighting up like a light bulb, doing antics, jumping around, moving around, and very clearly with a sunward spike, all of these effects possibly even affecting Earth with a electrical connections. Then in 38 million miles away, it's a long shot, but once the comet gets up and above us and behind us, aligned with Jupiter, aligned with Earth, the new moon, and Venus, that's when we could potentially be in the crossfire, once again see some of those hot electrons in the overall electrical discharge, the comet, Jupiter, all of those connecting, and possibly even see some influx into the atmosphere of chemicals that could come all the way from Jupiter. So that's what I've been talking about in past shows. And believe me, this is the core. This would be the core new observations as far as space weather, something we have never seen before. Seeing possibly next October when this comet comes by Mars, space weather, terraforming, so to speak, planet formation events going on the planet Mars, due to a close encounter, not relatively close, 7 million miles, but that's relatively close. A lot of comets can have a coma 100,000 miles across or larger. A lot of comets can have comets well over a million miles. One of the comets, I forget which comet it was measured by one of the solar orbiting satellites, and it was about 50 million miles away, they were seeing effects from that comet. So these things can have an effect at a great distance. So space weather is basically any weather that affects us from outer space. If you had a spaceship in outer space, you would have to be very privy to the conditions going on in outer space. One of the issues that happens, okay, so in summary, if you have not gotten the weather book, the Planet X, or if you haven't gotten my weather book, Principia Meteorologia, The Physics of Sun-Earth Weather, it's a book that really you have to read. It gives a lot of information. It gives a summary of the prior two books, but it would be healthy and wise to read the Planet X, Comets and Earth Changes book. It would also be good to read the Atlantis to Tesla, the Colburn Connection book, and also I recommend the Surviving Planet X passage pamphlet, which gives a lot of small but detailed information. It's a supplement to the Planet X, Comets and Earth Changes book. So at any rate, and along this same line, the Diamond Principle book, I always encourage people to read that because it really extends my work into the future. It summarizes the electrical nature of the solar system and gives a very good composite view of the future. So I'm looking forward very much to this coming year to discussing, like I say, concentrating on space weather, something that affects us, concentrating on your understanding out there of what space weather is, how it builds, because also we're heading into the solar maximum. That's a time when we could see more effects of space weather than normal. From the way it looks, we're not going to have a very big solar maximum coming up here. But still, we could have some pretty big booms coming out of the sun. And things can fool you, especially when we have a big comet coming into the solar system. So those conditions mixed together could bring some fireworks that otherwise we would not have. Because the comet can build up the power in the sun, like we saw with Hale-Bopp. That built up the sun for a period of about 6 years and caused the discharge of the solar capacitor. But anyway, time will tell, and make sure you keep tuned this year. It's going to be a very exciting year, 2013, with a lot of good information. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour, and as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.